I'd like to thank you for coming, first of all. I'm going to talk today a bit more about particles. We've heard some of them yesterday. It was a very interesting talk from Magnuski. There's a bit of mention about them this morning in terms of their effects that they can have in standard model interactions. In particular, we're looking at some interesting things that happen at the LHC. So I'm going to be talking about some work that I did with unparticles in the gravitational sector. This is a paper here, which I'm going to summarize the results of, and move on from that. All right. Since we're talking about gravitational effects, unparticles can influence gravitational effects. But the basic modifications to gravity that we have now, insofar as compactified extra dimensions are concerned, says something very interesting about gravity at the smaller scales. It says that the classical laws that we know of, in particular those that involve black holes, can be enhanced just from the stronger nature of gravity below the compactification scale. So I'll just throw these numbers up here. This is all standard stuff that we all know and love at the moment. Basically, the horizon distance can be modified because of the increased strength of gravity if the Planck scale is really on the TEB level instead of much higher. The end result of all this is at the LHC, if the mass of the black hole is created in excess of about 1 TeV, we should expect it to have a geometric cross-section on the order of about 100 femtobarns, or picobarns, I'm sorry. And at the maximum luminosity of the LHC, we believe, if all this is correct, that we will be able to have a black hole factory up and running. It will produce a black hole roughly one in every second. And again, this is just a general review of the literature. So let me talk a bit about unparticles. And again, we've heard a lot about them. Basically, unparticles are a conformal field theory, which is a scale invariant theory that is weakly interacting with the standard model at some high energy scale, interacted by some messenger of mass mu. Below some critical energy scale, the Running coupling kind of increases and it goes to a fixed value, a fixed IR point. And it couples to matter in some very interesting ways. It can couple as a scalar, as a vector, as a tensor, or as a spinner. We can have it kind of all kinds of Lorentz structures, any kind we want it to. And basically, what this boils down to is a playground for theorists to kind of pick and choose the kind of interaction they want to modify and see what happens to it. So today, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be picking tensor structure because we're talking about gravity. Just the general, these are for scalar tensors, but scalar on particles, I should say, but the general just applies for all the structures. When you derive the propagators, this is George I have done last year in his two seminal papers on the subject, you uncover a very odd-looking phase space for the unparticle stuff. Looks like a coefficient times a bunch of step functions times the momentum squared to the power of du minus 2. The coefficient is a function of a bunch of gamma functions, which themselves are gamma functions of the dimensional parameter du. And I kind of glossed over it. Du is the anomalous dimension of the unparticle field, which can take on any particular value it wants. It does not have to be integer. So we compare these two guys, the unparticle phase space and the standard model particle phase space. And you can kind of do a match-to-match of each of the coefficients, which led George I in his original paper to issue the following interpretation of unparticles. That unparticle stuff, as he likes to call it, looks like a non-integer number of individual massless particles. And this kind of, was a novel and outrageous statement to make at the time, because really, it sent people into a buzz of how we can, first of all, what does it mean? What does it mean to have a non-integer number of indivisible particles? How do we see that stuff? And what does it look like? Well, more recently, released a new paper on Archive where he's tried to derive a toy model of what an unparticle field might look like. So basically, he's talking about massless fermions and the references there. Well, there's a more practical interpretation of unparticles in their literature, which came out last summer, that basically unparticle stuff is a composite state of these Banach-Zach particles with a continuous mass spectrum, so which itself And I'll throw down the math here. Again, these are references to the literature. Basically speaking, that instead of being massless particles, unparticled stuff is a condenser, if you will, of a whole bunch of these massive Banksax particles that can have any particular mass they want. And in fact, we have an infinite sum of them. So they're operators in the field phi. And in the limit that delta goes to zero, where delta defines the mass gap, you get a continuous mass spectrum. So the unparticle becomes a particle that has no definite mass, but not a non-zero mass. So we can have any mass it wants, any size it wants. And it's sort of counterintuitive to quantum mechanics in a way. It gets rid of quantization and reintroduces continuum mechanics. But that's a secondary interpretation. Now, both of these interpretations I just issued for FYI, they aren't really relevant to what I'm going to be presenting. I'm going to talk about ungravity, and this is largely based on the work of Goldberg and Nash, which came out last summer. They proposed an initial look at what unparticles would look like if they were tensorial. All right, so they proposed a modification to the stress energy tensor that would be some function of an unparticle tensor operator coupled to stress energy. All right, they chose a term which basically is proportional to the metric. It looks like the cosmological constant term, if you will, and there's some interesting things that can be added into that. This is not conclusive. This is the only kind of term that you can have, but it was thrown in just for the sake of getting a term out there. There could be other kinds of problems. All right. So this OU, this operator, tensor operator, represents some kind of spin 2 particle, which we could call an ungraviton. Okay? So it's kind of coupling the matter in a similar way to the metric. As a side note, unparticles can also couple the matter via the baryon currents if they are vectorial, and that can introduce other fifth forces which are actually repulsive. But the one we're interested in is the gravitational one because it is attractive, and that's going to serve the mechanism that I want to talk about. All right, so the plan is you just do some quantum field theory and propagators, do some Fourier transform, and you recover a form of a spatial potential that looks like the Newtonian potential, plus an unparticle modification. And I say plus because it enhances gravity. Basically speaking, it boils down to, again, a function of the gammas times r star over r to the power of 2 dv minus 2. R star is a combination of these parameters, which we can call the ungravity interaction scale. So when the distance becomes commensurate with r star, we're going to start seeing some very interesting effects kick in. All right, well, it's kind of a free parameter. All these guys are free parameters that we can fool around with. We generally assume the mass of the messenger, mu, is greater than the transition scale lambda at which the unparticle matter takes over. The original Banksax dimension and the dimension of the unparticle field as well. So they're all kind of free parameters that we can fool around with. It gives us a very big parameter play space to work in. But of course, we can constrain this the exact same way we constrain any other kind of extra dimensional stuff through accelerators, Cavendish anomalies, and so forth. All right, well, end result, what we're going to talk about are unparticle-enhanced black holes. And bottom line is that if this transition scale is on the order of the TeV, which everything is these days, until the LHC is done, then we can see some possible new electroweak physics emerge without the addition of extra dimensions. And I think this is kind of the interesting thing. We can wave one crazy idea for another. So I postulated, this is just kind of an ad hoc thing I wrote down, what the metric might look like if we added in this this ungravity contribution. Now, this isn't a formal derivation of the metric, but I figured this is probably the kind of thing we would do. We could probably do some interesting cosmology on this. But what is very interesting is, again, we don't need the metric for this. We just look at the limit when the interaction scale approaches the unparticle interaction scale. And what ends up happening is our gravitational potential, this second term, the unparticle term, now dominates. And we get something that looks like, if you go back a couple slides and compare it to the ADD potential of extra dimensions, it looks like something that has 2 dU minus 2 extra dimensions, a space-time that has fractional extra dimension. I won't call it a fractal extra dimension because that makes some people angry. So I will call it a fractional or a virtual extra dimension. The upshot of this is that it modifies a horizon distance, and we can get a similar modified horizon distance that we could in the compacted by extra dimension case. So that becomes interesting. Okay, we've mimicked what an extra dimension does, or extra dimensions do, by not having them at all, but by instead having this field play the role of the extra dimensions. And we've increased our parameter space because we are not restricting ourselves to integer numbers of extra dimensions. All right. Well, what does this R star look like? If you actually plug in various numbers, assume lambda is about a TeV, okay, can't change M Planck. MU, we can assume, is a bit higher than TeV, probably about 10, maybe 100 TeV. Then what we get is an unparticle scale that kind of drops off with increasing dimension. And in fact, it was mentioned yesterday that a lot of people don't like using higher unparticle dimensions because it ruins what they're trying to do. In this case, it's the exact opposite. The higher extra dimension, or higher dimensions, the higher values of the dimensions are better. In fact, Grinstein in their paper said that for tensorial operators, you cannot have a dimension less than 4. So we're restricted to this area in here for the possible interaction scales. And if you look, then we're getting onto about the femtometer scale and below. So that becomes interesting for TeV physics. Well, if we calculate, just do a little calculation of what the geometric cross-section might look like for these black holes, then what we end up with in terms of picobaryons is something between about, if we assume the mass of the black hole is about 1 TeV, just under 20 picobaryons, all the way up to just about 50. So this isn't as robust as the extra dimensions, which in the most liberal cases predicts stuff up here, but it is significant. It's within an order of magnitude of this information. So it's interesting that this kind of thing could happen. Well, of course, the big question here is, how can you tell which is which if these two things mimic one another? Well, this is something that I'm working on currently, and there are several ways to look at this, but probably the most interesting way and the most elegant way and simplest way is to look at the Hawking temperature. So if you write down the Hawking temperature for an unparticled black hole, well, the Hawking temperature in general is 1 over 4 pi times the horizon, so basically 1, and if we plug in what our horizon value is for the unparticled black hole, we get something that looks like this. We could do a similar thing for the extra dimensional black holes. And if we plot, we come up with some plot of Hawking temperature versus the black hole mass that is produced, then we get very nice linear relationships very nice linear relationships whose slope is the only thing that depends on the dimension. Right? The constant is a function of all this other junk in here, log of the mass of the black hole, but the slope of these plots depends on 1 over 2 dE minus 1 here for the unparticle ones, 1 over n plus 1 for the real ones. And that very much restricts now the parameter space. All right, based on experimental results, we can say that any unparticle dimension greater than or equal to 4 corresponds to any extra dimension greater than or equal to 6. Little map there. And so what we do is if we plot what the slopes of these lines might look like for extra-dimensional black holes, then we are restricted to these lines only. Okay, it's a discrete thing that has to be either 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or whatever we want for dimensions. But when we throw in the unparticle stuff, remember, we're not restricted to having an integer number of dimensions at all. And we can actually fill this parameter space densely with any possible Hawking black. Anything down here is an extra dimension less than 6. We can rule those out through various experimental means and also through some theoretical means. But I think it's interesting that this is very much, you know, it's a is or isn't case. The only, well, it could be an on the fence case because it could be that this parameter here is exactly integer and matches up with that one. Then the differences will be a bit harder to detect, but there are possibly some ways to do that. And I'll sum those up in my conclusions here. So we've seen that ungravity provides this mechanism for us that mimics extra dimensions without the need of extra dimensions. So if we like a four-dimensional space-time, we get to keep it. All right, well, if we look at the parton, the actual parton distributions that come out of these things, and we modify them for whether we have extra dimensions or more unparticles, it could possibly be a unique spectrum which would help to address that on-the-fence case where the dimensions match up exactly. Now, I threw together that ungravity metric in my very unscientific way. It would be interesting to study the cosmology of it, assuming that it is correct, because it is a power law. It's a function of powers. So it's likely that the metric is probably right. Some very interesting properties you could look at a large scale. And also, vector ungravity, which I mentioned before, where it couples to baryon currents, provides repulsive forces instead of attractive forces. And what that could do is, looking at that from the point of view of black holes, we could have some interesting Reisner-Nordström or even Kerr-type solutions without angular momentum or charge. So we could have this multiple horizon situation, which I think is kind of neat, too. Again, as mentioned in the talk yesterday, you need to look very closely at CFT and the unitarity constraints on these. So the propagator is exactly right. Are there terms which will swamp the unparticle influences if there are? Ball game over, but it was fun while it lasted. But ultimately, I think this also provides something. Again, when the party's over next year with the LHC, or several years from now, we can look at physics beyond the LHC, much, much higher than TEV stuff, because this can provide a general kind of mechanism that could be a, who knows, a viable alternative to supersymmetry or any other kind of modifications to our standard model that needs help. On that note, thank you very much. I have to apologize for the delay. Yes.
Absolutely.
Is the early universe, as far as we in this model, exactly similar to ADD models, where you populate very many states?
For early universe?
Yes. Say if I, you know, it's known that you take ADD, mm-hmm. you heat it up to 100 MeV, and that's it. You cannot do it more, because if you do, then you will start getting all these kinds of line states decaying, and then only later, and you do all of these, all sorts of gamma diagrams and so on. So ADD doesn't make sense above 100 MeV temperature, but, you know, the canonical sort of whatever
mm-hmm.
right? So is this exactly behaving exactly the same way?
It's too early to say right now.
I think you should be able to.
I certainly plan to, yes, but at the moment I'm unsure of that.
The real question is what's the total number of degrees of freedom? What's the thermal susceptibility of this, right? If I heat a standard model to 100 GeV and I wait long enough, there will be 100 degrees of freedom floating, mm-hmm. but not 10 to the 10 degrees of freedom. So here the number of degrees of freedom will grow like power with temperature, no?
Again, if I answered you, it would just be off my tongue, so I'm not sure. I'm going to have to hold that question.
Do you know?
Now you have a question. How do you measure the optical temperature and the mass of the pixel?
Well, you would look at basically a statistical distribution of them, right, of any kind of events that you have coming out. And again, this is kind of a hypothetical case that we could have. I mean, you're looking at parton distributions that come out of these things, the cascades and the showers that come out. So depending on what is created, you can tell what energy they have and then trace it back to originally what the Hawking temperature would have been.
You have not derived the metric. Have you done the reverse thing? Have you tried to see what kind of energy momentum transfer is required to get that metric?
I'm in the process of doing that right now. Yeah. I've done some initial things, just playing around with it, looking at what curvature tensor looks like to see if it's still well behaved in the same way that the regular one is. And so far, so good. But that's something that's in progress. Yeah.
One other question. ADD models in generic, they have a problem that you induce higher dimensional operators because they have a very low cutoff scale.
Mm-hmm.
can you do something like doing loop calculation due to unparticle stuff to your standard model particles, and we have a similar question or problem here?
I would think you could. The unparticle mechanism is still very much in its infancy, in the sense that there's a whole bunch of stuff out there that people want to do. They don't have a set number of things they can do with it yet. But in principle, yes, I would agree that that's certainly possible.
I'll make a comment about that. I kind of disagree. When you do these two-point correlators in the unparticle sector, mm-hmm. are exactly computed two-point functions, all or this number curve, which is completely fixed by symmetry. The only thing that is not known is some overall stuff. There's not loops to do anything. I mean, all of the loops have been done since number curve. That's the end of the story.
So, but thinking about what proton decay rate used by some particle in between.
Right. So the unparticle in between is a two-point function of the unparticles.
Okay, standard model is outside.
The standard model, you can do all the loops you want. That's the standard way. But the unparticle sector is done exactly.
So therefore, I can directly calculate, if I know the higher endpoint functions of the conformal sector, what my dimension 5, dimension 6 operators would be induced in standard model due to the unparticles. It's just I have three-point functions, for example, in my conformal field theory as well, and if I have calculated sort of two standard model particles, two unparticles, then this would give me an effective.
You have to have something that connects. There's a lot known about three-point functions in the conformal field in four dimensions. Very little about four-point functions in the three-point functions are still largely constrained by just by the conformal group. But above that, you don't have to
have. I just mean, because this would be an extreme advantage compared to ADD models where you can just parameterize the higher dimensional operators here. There might be a way of calculating.
Well, I thought ADD models in the end are supposed to be dual to a CFT, right?
Okay, so then I think we'll move on. Thanks again.